people think little girls should be seen and not heard, but I think
class war.
Class war, the only war.
We want to just quickly send a nice friendly message to the Fraternal Order of Police in Philadelphia.
This is an anti-Nazi song.
Hello and welcome to another monthly edition of The Rebel Beat, a Firebrand Records podcast. My name is Aaron and we're coming at you for February 2018. On the show this week, we're going strictly reggae, taking you to the radical roots of 70s foundation, dancehall, and lovers rock. Our special guest on the program today is Maddie Ruthless, once known as the Rocksteady Queen of New Orleans, and now tearing it up and mashing down Babylon in Brooklyn with the Far East Band. We spoke with Maddie about the radical, anti-imperialist, and anti-racist message of reggae, being a woman in the music scene, anti-fascist music in the age of Trump, and touring with two-tone ska legends The Specials. Stay tuned for that coming right up. But first, let's get into some righteous reggae right now with this tune from Hortense Ellis.
Hey! is not what Jay said to Nas. Beef is when the working folks can't find jobs, so they tryna find niggas to rob, tryna find bigger guns for them to finish the job. Beef is when the crack babies can't find moms, cause they in a pine box, I lock behind bars. Beef ain't the summer jam for Hot 97. Beef is the cocaine and AIDS epidemic. Beef don't come with a radio edit. Beef is when the judge is calling you defendant. Beef, it come with a long jail sentence, handed down to you in a few short minutes.
Walking down the road with the pistol in your waist, young and too bad.
Almost deaf, deaf, deaf. Your girl come through for a visit to tell you how she pregnant by some other nigga. Beef is high blood pressure and bad credit. Need a loan for your home, but you're too broke to get it. And all your little kids doing is getting bigger. You trying not to raise them around these wild niggas. Beef is when a gold nigga got your seat in a manicure hand out like, pay me, nigga. Ha. Oh, I'm telling your wife is starting up some foul rumor that to ruin your life. Beef is when the gangster ain't doing it right, and other gangsters undecided what to do with his life.
Walking down the road with the pistol in your waist, young you're too bad.
Not what these famous niggas do on the mic. Beef is what George Bush would do in the fight. Beef is Miss Wallace, still don't know who shot Biggie. And beef is well done Irv not being here with me. When a soldier ends his life with his own gun, beef is trying to figure out what to tell his son. Beef is oil prices and geopolitics. Beef is Iraq, the West Bank and Gaza Strip. Some beef is big and some beef is small, but charcoal beef is not beef at all. No, beef is real life happening every day, and it's realer than them songs that you gave to K Slay.
Walking down the road with a pistol in your waist, young you're too bad.
Welcome back to The Rebel Beat. My name is Aaron. This is, of course, your monthly installment of Class War on the Dance Floor, fusing music and radical politics, looking at the intersections between each and bringing heavy bass and beats to the revolution. We first heard Hortense Ellis in there doing a cover of the powerful soul song People Make the World Go Round, and then a mashup of The Slickers and Mos Def under the project name Mos Dub. That was Johnny Two Beef, and that was, of course, off of a project done by the New York producer Max Tanon a handful of years ago. Still a wonderful album that stands the test of time. Of course, big news that came out in the last few weeks, Talib Kweli and Yasin Bey, aka Mos Def, the two of them together, known as Black Star, are putting out a new album in 2018. This is going to come no less than 20 years after the classic debut album that they did together. So we are very excited about that. And of course, The Rebel Beat is a Firebrand Records podcast. Check out Firebrand and their roster of amazing political artists at firebrandrecords.com. If you're not already subscribed to this podcast, you can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you like grabbing your podcasts. Hit the big subscribe button, and it's the best way to never miss a Rebel Beat. We hope that you like this podcast, and if you do, How about supporting it? Here's three very simple ways to do that, to break it down for you. One is to leave us a rating or a review. No matter how you download your podcasts, you can take 2 seconds and click the 5 stars button, or, you know, however many stars we deserve. But doing that, regardless of however many stars it is, really helps other people find this podcast. So take a second right now and leave us a review. You can also support us by making a donation. You can become a monthly donor and throw us as little as $1 a month on our Patreon page at patreon.com/rebelbeatradio. $1 might not be a lot to you, but it means a lot to us. So find that link to our Patreon page in the show notes. Or if you want to make a one-off donation, you can also send us some cash via PayPal to rebel@ckut.ca. And finally, the third great way to support this podcast is just to tell a friend. Simple as that. But word of mouth is a great way of spreading your favorite podcasts around and growing this base of the Rebel Beat. We have some very exciting plans in 2018 for this program. Our next episode is going to feature an interview with the whiskey rabbi himself, Jeff Berner, always calling out colonialism and police brutality with an accordion in hand. We're also looking at bringing you interviews with Alal from Toronto and Moore Mother from Philadelphia. We're also working on a monthly newsletter to send out, chock full of recommendations of music, links to articles and videos, and so much more. But to get that, you got to sign up as a Patreon supporter. And again, you can do that at patreon.com/rebelbeatradio. The Rebel Beat is also a proud member of the Channel Zero network of anarchist podcasts. You can hear dozens and dozens of anarchist podcasts at Channel Zero, podcasts that are putting out ideas for a world free of fascism, sexism, transphobia, and homophobia, and a world full of freedom. We just added 2 new podcasts to the network, the Guillotine and the Radical People podcasts, so you can check them all out at channelzeronetwork.com. And here's a little snippet of what Channel Zero is all about.
It's going down, and you're invited for what they selling. We ain't buying. There is no running. There is no hiding. There's only fighting or dying. It's going down, and you're invited for what they selling. We ain't buying. There is no running. There is no hiding. There's only fighting or dying.
It's Going Down is a digital community center from anarchist, anti-fascist, autonomous, anti-capitalist, and anti-colonial movements. Our mission is to provide an autonomous and resilient platform to publicize and promote revolutionary theory and action.
Go to itsgoingdown.org for daily updates. Check out our online store for ways to donate, and rate and follow us on iTunes if you like this podcast.
All right, welcome back to the Rebel Beat. We're going to go now to our feature interview on the show. Our guest on the program this month is none other than Maddie Ruthless of the Far East. Brooklyn's The Far East appeared in 2013 with their single Youth Man, immediately gaining recognition and airplay from BBC Radio's David Rodigan, a huge, huge figure in the world of reggae. The Far East pull inspiration from foundation rhythm and youth spent in punk rock, bringing new heavy magic to an old sound. Disillusioned with modern life and digital noise, the Far East immerse themselves completely in the often forgotten beauty of rocksteady, roots, and classic dancehall. Maddie Ruthless is their frontwoman, and full disclosure, she's also a friend of mine, but we're ecstatic to have her on the Rebel Beat today. Before we get to that interview, here's a tune Maddie did with her previous reggae outfit, The Forthrights. I think this tune really encapsulates not only Maddie's talent as a musician, but also her radical politics. So we'll hear more of that in the interview as well. Here are The Forthrights with Maddie Ruthless with They Didn't Build This World For You.
Down, down, down.
on the line from Brooklyn, New York, once called herself the Rocksteady Queen of New Orleans, now in Brooklyn, of course, Maddie Ruthless from the Far East. How you doing, Maddie?
I'm great. Thanks for having me, Aaron.
Yeah. All right. Well, so this is an exciting interview because you've been on my show before as a guest, but not necessarily on the Rebel Beat. You know, back when I used to do a ska and reggae show, Roots Rock Rebel, I've had you on, I think, numerous times as a guest, either on the phone or up in studio.
And definitely.
It's nice to continue this radio relationship, you know, after years and years and years. So I'm pumped to have you back on the show.
I'm glad that you're documenting our evolution politically and musically together. One day we'll look back and we'll listen to them all and we'll say, wow.
Totally. I think the first time I interviewed you was probably about 10 years ago. So we've probably both come a bit far since then.
Amazing.
Yeah.
That's really cool, actually.
Well, before going any further, tell us like a little bit about yourself and maybe, you know, what you were doing in New Orleans. Like, you started out playing music down there and maybe kind of like your trajectory up to New York, where you are now.
Sure. So I've always been interested in music and called myself a musician. And in New Orleans, I was mostly DJing and working at a record store, but still making music and living at a pretty cool anarchist collective space called Nove Miasto. And eventually I decided that to kind of delve further into my love of Jamaican music, I needed to come to where the most Jamaican immigrants in the United States actually live, which is Brooklyn, to really learn more than I knew before. And in New Orleans, I kind of felt like I had maxed out what I knew about Jamaican music and Jamaican history. And so I decided to come up to Brooklyn, where I could learn a lot more, and just make better music. And, you know, luckily there's a really eclectic group of people in Brooklyn making reggae music. A lot of like eclectic young people who are kind of coming together, and sort of continuing what I would call a legacy of anti-racist music, but, you know, really just a legacy of a more integrated rock scene in Brooklyn, which in New Orleans is the, you know, one of the most beautiful local cultures in the world, in my opinion, but it's a specifically New Orleans music scene, right, as it should be. And of course that's where I came from and I have the utmost respect for it, but I wanted to, you know, broaden my horizons and go up to New York and kind of check out the reggae culture in Brooklyn. And gosh, I've learned so much since being here.
For sure, yeah. And I mean, I've never been in New Orleans myself. Obviously, it's got such a rich musical history and tradition. I'm wondering though, like, from what you're saying, it sounds like it's almost like, you know, it has those roots in like soul and funk and brass music. Is there kind of a hesitancy to kind of like, well, I mean, you don't want to discount, of course, like bounce music and like all the hip hop in New Orleans. But is it harder in a sense to make it there if you're not playing those kind of specific New Orleans genres?
Definitely. And
I mean, you got to throw metal in there, I guess, too.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
I think that it's important to New Orleanians to preserve New Orleans culture. And I'm sure as someone from or who's living in Montreal, you can relate that there's a strong desire and kind of collective will to preserve New Orleans culture. And it's very important. And, you know, I wish that across the world there was this kind of unity to preserve one's local culture and of course evolve with it. But there's just not, and I understand why there's not a super strong reggae culture in New Orleans, because it's a small town. Ultimately, it's only 500,000 people that live there, and there's a lot of work to be done preserving New Orleans culture. So yeah, there's a lot of brass band music and traditional jazz, funk, bounce. I mean, but even that hip hop culture is on a trajectory from the second line beat, which is kind of the foundation of all New Orleans music.
To come back to the music that you're playing, so since you moved up to New York, you've played in a few different outfits, the Fourth Rights when they were still playing, and now you're of course the front woman of the Far East. Tell us a little bit about this band. Pick up and you go. Where do you call home? Where do you lay to rest? You know it's not wise to be out by yourself, even the long move. He must go run with the pack, even the leopard. She must go home to her den. Do you remember where you are called?
Yeah, the Far East is definitely really still Maddie, you know? I'm a weirdo, self-proclaimed weirdo, so that's never gonna change about me. But just the influence of Jamaican music on us we've taken it a lot more seriously in the Far East. And, you know, we sort of unapologetically play reggae music. We don't play like a fusion of other kinds of music. Mm. And the Far East has become a really special project. And because of that, we've had the chance to open for some bands that we really look up to a lot, which has been super fun. But I have to say the bigger shows aren't as much fun as like the smaller kind of DIY shows that we've always thrown in Bushwick.
So the sound that you're going for with the Far East, I think is really interesting. It's kind of like a hybrid of a lot of the different roots or subgenres in reggae. So what is that sound and how do you craft it?
Yeah, you know, what's kind of fun, I will say the Far East, while not being like overtly political, you know, we play reggae unapologetically. Right. And so I think in of itself there's some politics in that. But really, yeah, with the Far East, we focus on roots reggae. And we listen to a lot of kind of 70s reggae, like Channel One, The Revolutionaries, Soul Syndicate. You know, we really look up to those bands. And what's cool about living in New York is that we have the chance to meet some of those musicians and to ask them firsthand, hey, how did you play that thing on that one song? And to learn directly from some of the people that founded this music. And kind of what I think is crazy about reggae is that it's an incredible, prolific genre. I mean, you can listen your whole life to reggae and never hear all the reggae that there is. And it came from a tiny island and it changed the whole world. And yet a lot of the people that founded this music never made any money from it, are not well known, aren't like actively celebrated. So on the one hand, we're kind of lucky because we can talk to those people and they live in New York City and we can meet up with them. But on the other hand, to me, it's like a little bittersweet because I think some of these musicians should be like as noted as U2 or some of the like larger right. white rock bands, you know?
Yeah. Who are some of those kind of more foundational or pioneering reggae artists who are living in New York these days?
Well, Johnny Osborne is one of them, who's, you know, from the Rocksteady era. Mm. I'm trying to think of musicians themselves, too. The other day when we played with the Wailers, we played with Family Man, you know, Aston Barrett.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Specifically, there's a lot of dance hall artists who, right. to me, are like, you know, some of the greatest hip-hop artists in the world.
Sister Nancy lives in the New York City area, doesn't she?
Yes, Sister Nancy. We often have Shinehead come through here, although he lives in California.
Nice.
Sammy Dredd. You know, what's sad is that I can like rattle off a lot of names, but I mean, to me, they're celebrities, and to me, they invented hip hop.
Right.
But to other people, they might not even know their names. Like, for instance, Lady Anne is the first female MC. You know,
right, yeah,
she's the first female rapper, and she lives in the New York area. And then, you know, just learning from some of the musicians. There's a great musician who lives here named Andy Basford, who's a guitarist who played on a lot of 70s and 80s Jamaican recordings. And kind of learned his technique from Chinna. So, you know, it's a special community here. It's definitely a fabric of a lot of different people. One interesting thing that we got to do was we got to press our latest 45 at Channel One.
Oh, wow.
So Channel One is a famed 70s reggae roots label, and they ended up moving their record press from Jamaica to Brooklyn,
wow.
I think in the late 70s, early 80s. And Jojo Hoo Kim, Mr. Hoo Kim, who ran Channel One, he still runs the record press. It's actually in Williamsburg, right on the waterfront.
Wow. Is this like a massive machine to like ship up from Jamaica all the way up to New York?
Yeah, you know, I'm not 100% sure if they bought it when they moved to New York or okay. if they shipped it, but they moved their whole operation from Kingston to New York and continued pressing records. And
that's incredible.
It's just amazing to go and pick up your records from the same place that like your heroes picked up their records.
Totally. Yeah. So to come back to the Far East, I mean, as you said earlier, you guys are playing a style of music that's a little bit of a throwback to the 1970s. What I think is really interesting about this, and with reggae music in general, is that a lot of people still have this perception that reggae is either apolitical or is all just kind of about peace and love, smoke and weed, you know.
Yeah.
That whole perception of Bob Marley in this, yeah, very hippie sense, right? And then
right.
people forget that Bob Marley had tunes like War or Burnin', Lootin', and Wailin', right? And
right.
I think so. What's interesting about the kind of music that you guys do is you had, of course, the birth of reggae, which came out of rocksteady, which came out of ska in the 1960s, which was right after Jamaica got its independence. So it's kind of this very joyful era of a lot of optimism and people just being happy to be their own country, right? There were so many old
right.
ska tunes and old rocksteady tunes about that independence era. And then, of course, rocksteady, which came right after, was super romantic. So just like a lot of themes of love and happiness. And then you kind of go into the 70s, which was maybe a period, and I think this happens after a lot of national liberation movements and independence movements,
right.
where there's like a shift from that initial optimism to
the
honeymoon is over. You're like, oh shit, a lot of these promises that were made by the initial leaders of the nation are not coming true. We're still living in poverty. You know, we still owe massive amounts of debts to other Western countries. And so I think the reggae of that era, of the 70s, reflected that not only in the lyrics, but also in the style, right? So it was a little bit harder edge, a little bit mm-hmm. more drum driven, you know, like less kind of happy and romantic in certain ways than the rocksteady
yeah.
era. Talk a little, like, so maybe pick up on that there in terms
sure.
of like that roots era and kind of like what you see as like the politics that might be embedded in it.
Sure. Well, so just to kind of go back to what you were saying about Bob Marley, I think that there has been like really a massive effort to depoliticize Bob Marley and to just in general kind of depoliticize the message from Jamaica and to kind of take it out of context of what Bob Marley was saying during especially the almost civil war that happened in Jamaica between you know, the JNP party and the PNP party. So, right, I think that there has been a large effort to kind of change the story there and to also discredit reggae as a genre by mainstream pop music. I think that there's been really kind of a racist hand dealt to reggae musicians. And you can even see, if you look at the top 10 chart today on iTunes, that the most successful reggae bands in America often tend to be, you know, these white male white reggae bands that sing primarily about really neutral subjects, and kind of don't bring race into the equation at all. But anyway, with our music, I think that we have a deep love of that 70s era of Jamaican music, 80s era of Jamaican music. Really, all eras of Jamaican music are on deck for us, but the 70s era is really special, and particularly I have a lot of love for the Lovers Rock that came from England. And kind of what's neat about Lovers Rock to me is that England in the 70s was a pretty dismal place. It was economically kind of crumbling, and there was a lot of unemployment, but you still have some of these really romantic, kind of dreamy songs coming out of the Lovers Rock era. And primarily women of color kind of leading the way with that. So that's an under-celebrated era of Jamaican music in my eyes.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, about, like, to come back to yourself, like, you know, you're someone who over the years has had, you know, and held really radical political values. You mentioned earlier, used to be in an anarchist collective in New Orleans. And to me, it's always interesting to talk to people like yourself, who have these radical political ideas, who play music, but who aren't necessarily writing those kind of like punk songs of like smash the state. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe it's more subtle in a way. And so, yeah, I'm wondering if you could like talk a little bit about the political values that you hold and if and how you see them reflected in the Far East or in the music you play.
Yeah, totally. So, I mean, I think that in the future, when we like look at consciousness and radical people, I mean, I think that it's okay to hold a profession and it not be, you know, we're never going to be like propaganda where we're making this like really political music. But we definitely make political choices as a band, and we run our band in a way where we try to be conscious of our privilege and how we can be more inclusive as an all white rock band, and historically what white rock bands have stolen from other people. So I think that that's, you know, how we include our ideals in our music, rather than, you know, although we do have some political songs, I just think that they all kind of end up sounding sort of romantic.
Right. Which is, you can have both. So, you can have romantic political songs too. Revolutionaries, yeah, gotta love as well.
Definitely. And you know what, I think that there's been kind of a, I don't know, there's been like sort of a standard of what political songs have to sound like. And you know, if you're like, oh, what does political music sound like? You think, oh, Rage Against the Machine,
right,
The Clash, propaganda. And, you know, I'm a woman, so I sound like a woman, and I play reggae, so it's going to sound like reggae. So, you know, a lot of people say, oh, they're not such a political band. But, I mean, in my eyes, we're a political band. So.
Totally, yeah. And I mean, there you go, like, you know, you brought up, of course, the fact that, like, you're a woman who's fronting a reggae band, and that's something we don't see that much these days. I mean, well, of course, you know, you mentioned some of those folks like Lady Anne, Sister Nancy, right? So we have to pay respect to some of those foundational artists, Marsha Griffiths as well. But, Yeah, talk a little about what that's like, you know, today, 2018, being a woman fronting a reggae band.
Yeah, it's lonely. There's not a lot of other women playing reggae music. And actually, last night I went and saw a pretty cool all-girl surf band called La Luz. And I was just thinking, gosh, that must be so wonderful to play with other women. And there just isn't a lot. I mean, reggae is a small genre in that there's just not as many participants as a bigger rock genre. But then the population of women playing reggae is even smaller. And I'm lucky in New York, there's a lot of Jamaican women that are singers, that they may not run bands, but at least, you know, they're singing and they're kind of up there and they're fronting their own music project and singing original lyrics. So I'm always happy to, you know, perform with some of the Jamaican women in the music scene. But yeah, you know, oftentimes I find myself in sessions. Recently I did a session with Top Shotta Band where we recorded rhythms for Screechy Dan and for some other artists, and you know, oftentimes I'm always the only woman playing this genre, and then I think it's surprising to other reggae musicians to even encounter another woman playing reggae. So I try to encourage other women in our community to start bands. So yeah. Or I hope in the future we can see more. Because it is, it's a lonely position to hold.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, there's of course been a legacy of tons of women vocalists in reggae, but you sing and play guitar. So is the fact that you're playing guitar maybe the thing that's surprising the people?
Or? Yes, absolutely. So the fact that I'm playing guitar, and then, you know, we do a lot of recording projects here too. So seeing me operating the tape machine, setting up microphones, you know, there's just very, I think about Sonia Pottinger a lot in Jamaican history as someone that, she was a female producer from Jamaica, and I often wonder what her life was like, and I wonder if I could have related to her at all.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think that within, you know, rock music in general, there's some hope because we're seeing that it's becoming more inclusive. And I think that, you know, although climate change is destroying our planet, you know, as time goes on, it seems that like rock music is opening up a little bit. So maybe I hope that that translates to the reggae scene. It seems like the reggae scene is often the last to receive some of those progress points.
Yeah. I mean, I went down to Vermont, to Burlington, Vermont, to see the Far East play last summer. It was an amazing show, but like one thing, unfortunately, that kind of stood out for me is there was a guy in the audience who was like catcalling you loudly, like the whole time. And I was like, I was looking around for him because I was like, I swear to God, if this guy's near me, I'm going to punch him right now because this is ridiculous. And I don't know if you heard it on stage, but I think maybe we talked afterwards and you're just like, whatever, I'm going to ignore this. But I'm wondering if that's something that happens often and how you deal with it and what your advice might be to other women musicians who get that when they're on stage as well.
It is. I think that for most women, it's kind of just like a part of your life, though. So, it's not very unfamiliar to me. And I just soldier through. You know, ultimately, I'm holding the power as someone who's taking space on stage, and that can be upsetting to a lot of men that want to take power away from women, or just, you know, take you down a notch, and really, it's something I just ignore usually. Or if I have the chance to find them in the audience, then I think punching them in the face is an avenue I might take as well. Yeah. But I often never see them again. Or if I find them face to face, they don't have the same kind of, they're not so intimidating face to face. So it's easier catcall you when you're up on stage, but then you get on down on their level and they're not so big anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, but it's a big tree and we're a small axe, so we just keep chopping away and I don't let it get to me. I guess my advice to other women is, you know, try to think about the fact that you're a part of a larger community of women and they're all doing the same thing. So we're all in this together. And I think about what some of the Jamaican women of color maybe have gone through as musicians and how it may have been even harder for them. So I just try to be brave.
Totally. Yeah. And that's a really cool way to think about it in terms of thinking like who holds power in that moment and the space that you're occupying. It's like, hey, I've got the microphone, you know, this is my time right now.
So. Yeah. I think it's, yeah, that guy was a loser.
So at that show, of course, you guys are also opening up for The Specials, legendary two-tone ska band. You guys have toured with them on a few different occasions now. And yeah, I mean, The Specials are an incredible band in so many ways, like being the pioneers of that kind of two-tone sound coming out of the UK in the late 70s and being part of that wave of bringing reggae and ska into the punk world and then bringing an incredible anti-racist message to it as well.
Right.
Being a multiracial band in a very tumultuous time in England. What it was like touring with The Specials.
Yeah, you know, I think they made a lot of steps forward being a multiracial band in the late 70s in England and playing reggae music. I mean, and mixing it with punk. That was a pioneering idea and they made a lot of steps forward. And I think one thing that we gathered from them and that I took away from touring with them is that it's our turn and that we have to take the next steps. Mm. And so, you know, they made this leap in that they mixed black and white people together to play punk music. But there's still a lot of work to be done. Like, you know, I don't know if gay people feel welcome in all punk or reggae scenes. I don't think a lot of women feel welcome. So I think there's still a lot of steps forward to take. And I think it's an honor to kind of continue that legacy and to look to their example and take the next steps. One thing that the drummer who replaced their late drummer, John Bradbury, they have a new drummer. His name is Gary Powell, and he comes from a band called the Libertines. And something he told us is that we're a part of this legacy now, and that it's a history and it's a legacy, and I'm taking it very seriously. I'm kind of taking it on and I'm taking it to heart. So
yeah, well, it's so cool because it's like it's really clear that The Specials have in a way kind of taken the Far East under their wing. You can really see that, like, you know, Linville Golding, who's their guitarist, you know, British man of Jamaican descent. He was just big up in you guys so much. And I know, like, he's come on stage with you guys. And he's someone who, to this day, is really political when he was on stage. You know, he was calling out Donald Trump and big up in the Black Lives Matter movement. What's that been like, in a way, almost being like, I don't want to call you guys, like, the protégés of The Specials, but just having that relationship with them.
It's been like beyond an honor. Like it's been kind of a dream come true because of course I grew up with The Specials poster on my wall and just idolizing them, and actually meeting them helps you kind of understand what they had to go through because it wasn't easy, and we can look back on it now and kind of romanticize it, but especially Linval, you know, he went through so much to play the music he wanted to play and to play with his white friends. And, you know, he was beaten, he was harassed by the far right. And he's still so brave, and he's up there saying Black Lives Matter, and he also made a point to talk about Indigenous lives a lot on tour. And so it was hugely inspiring. Yeah. And the other thing about Linval specifically is he's just so positive. He's like one of the most positive people I've ever met. And to just see someone who's approaching 65 and is still doing what we're doing, it just makes you feel like you have a home in this, totally, in this music, and that you have a, you know, he kind of showed us a path. So I'm grateful. I'll forever be grateful. And to just have that friendship was really important, and to have that validation, especially, you know, as one of the only women that play this kind of music out there in New York, you get, you know, you don't get a lot of validation all the time. So to be validated in that way and to say, hey, what you are doing is important, was life changing for me.
You know, one thing I've excuse me, one thing I've got to ask you, because you know, you've met the band, is Terry Hall, who's the singer of the band, has one of the strangest stage personalities I've ever seen. This kind of like sneering kind of looks like almost like he doesn't want to be on the stage at all. I mean, is he the same way backstage as he is on stage, or what's Terry Hall like?
He's actually so nice. He's super sweet. One thing that I think I learned from Terry Hall is that he's like the real deal. He's a real punk rocker from the 70s, you know? Terry fronted an anarcho-punk band before he joined the Specials called Squad.
Wow.
And they had a couple of big tunes, and they actually went on with a different lead singer after he joined the Specials. But Terry Hall, he doesn't smile unless he has a reason to smile. Right. And he doesn't put up with any nonsense, and he's very unfiltered and candid. And that's something I learned about him. He, you know, one thing he kind of taught me was to really stand up for myself. And he stands up for himself. He's just sort of unapologetically himself, you know.
Right. Yeah.
And he suffers with some mental health issues, and he's kind of doesn't make any excuses for himself, you know. If he wants to do it, he does it. If he doesn't want to do it, he doesn't do it. And I think that that's something really powerful. So when he gets on stage, what you're seeing is Terry Hall. That's, you know, there's no stage Terry Hall and backstage Terry. That's just, he is who he is, and I think that's kind of special about him.
Yeah, totally. Last thing I want to ask you is, I just thought about this because I said Donald Trump, and I'm not going to ask you a question about Trump or about what you think about Donald Trump, because the answer might be obvious. But I guess like looking, you know, where we are in the U.S., but you can't even just say the U.S. because it's really kind of this toxic white supremacist, absolutely, you know, fascist atmosphere that is gripping a lot of the Western world right now. And in some ways you guys are in the belly of the beast. And I'm wondering, you know, what that's like, you know, playing the kind of music you guys are playing right now and trying to put these politics forward in one way or another in a moment where it's like, you know, thinking back to like where the Specials came from in the 1970s in the UK with a growing British Nationalist Party and a growing neo-Nazi movement, maybe in some ways, right, like comparable to that era.
Absolutely.
But where we're seeing neo-Nazis.
Maybe worse, even.
Could be worse, yeah. And it's like, you know, we're seeing like events like Charlottesville happening. We're seeing neo-Nazis on the streets in so many U.S. cities. So maybe just some like reflections around that in terms of what it's like playing the kind of music you play in times like these.
Absolutely. I mean, I think for what you can say about Donald Trump is that he's also not only an extension of like white supremacy to its furthest point, and it's for those capabilities, but also capitalism, like as a disaster and kind of as it's intertwined with white supremacy. And I think that a lot of leftists can say about Donald Trump, like, yeah, this is a visualization of what we knew existed. I just think we're not going to stop playing with all kinds of people. We're not going to stop standing up for and including for marginalized people. And this is the future, you know? The future is boundless as far as what genres people are allowed to play. And the future is boundless as far as who's allowed to be in spaces together. And we're going to move forward. And I think a lot of the political climate is just stuck in the past. And you know, The Clash said the future is unwritten. And I think that the specials kind of came from that tradition as well, where it's like, this is the future and you have to accept it, and we're going to put ourselves out there as what the future looks like. And that's kind of where we're coming from too. The future is inclusive, and
definitely.
Absolutely. It's more important to play this music and to be outspoken than ever before.
Definitely. Lastly, the catalog that you guys have put out is pretty much a bunch of singles that are out there. You guys have pressed some 45s. You can find some of your music up on like SoundCloud or Spotify. Are you guys planning on putting out a full-length album, or are you really just kind of moving towards doing more of these singles, as it were?
So we're going to put out an EP in the spring of 5 or 6 songs together, and that's something we're really excited about. We've really been crazy perfectionists about recording, and I think that that's the resounding complaint amongst our fans and supporters is that we've been too kind of guarded in what we've released. And I think it's just that we put a lot of pressures on ourselves to make it the kind of music we're really proud of. But yes, we're going to be releasing an EP in the spring, and it's produced by Brett Tubin. His label's called, or his production house is called, Channel Tubes. And so we're going to be releasing that with him in the spring, and then we have demos recorded for, you know, a full-length album, so hopefully that's next. We said to ourselves, this is the year of release. We're releasing it. And we're excited because we're doing some fun stuff too, like we made some music videos, so we're gonna hopefully get those out too.
Amazing. Well, again, we've been speaking with Maddie Ruthless from the Far East on the line with us down from Brooklyn, New York. Maddie, thanks so much for being with us on The Rebel Beat today.
Thank you, Aaron. It was a pleasure.
just to forget her.
Welcome back to The Rebel Beat, a Firebrand Records podcast. We're about to round down the show, but as usual, it's time for our Turn It Up segment, where we big up a musician or an activist organization or a revolutionary who are using their platform for political change. And today on the program, we're going to big up the Black activists, scholars, and musicians such as Talib Kweli, Tom Morello, and Vic Mensa, who signed an open letter from the Dream Defenders calling for the freedom of Palestinian youth activist Ahed Tamimi. I'm going to read that letter right here because it's really powerful, and we'll also link to it in the show notes. On December 15, 2017, 15-year-old Mohammed Tamimi was shot in the face by an Israeli soldier while participating in an unarmed protest of Trump's Jerusalem Declaration. That's, of course, Donald Trump's announcement to move the American embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. Just minutes later, his 16-year-old cousin Ahed rose up to protect her family's home after two armed soldiers invaded her yard. For over 50 years, the Israeli army has stationed itself on Palestinian land in order to enforce its violent military occupation of the West Bank. Ahed stood her ground and asked the soldiers to leave. When they refused and tried to use her property as a base from which to shoot at protesters, she slapped one of them. Her cousin Noor and her mother Nariman were also arrested. All three have been indicted by Israeli military court, which has a 99.7 conviction rate and lacks basic fair trial protections. Ahed has been denied bail, and her trial will begin on February 12th. Both Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch have called for her release. In the U.S., we know all too well what it's like to be oppressed simply because you exist, because you refuse to give up your fight for freedom. Last year, a Dream Defenders delegation of artists traveled to Palestine to bear witness to life under Israeli military occupation and met with the Tamimi family in their village of Nabi Saleh. Songs and stories of struggle were shared from the U.S. to Palestine. The Tamimis spoke about their daily lives, the Israeli army patrolling and shooting into their streets as their children play, Israeli settlers stealing their water. The delegation learned that every year hundreds of Palestinian kids across the West Bank are arrested and detained by Israeli soldiers and police who kick, punch, and beat them. Torture is routinely used to get signed confessions from children, mainly on charges of stone throwing. While our struggles may be unique, the parallels cannot be ignored. U.S. police, ICE, Border Patrol, and FBI train with Israeli soldiers, police, and border agents, utilizing similar repressive profiling tactics to target and harass our communities. Too many of our children quickly learn that they may be imprisoned or killed simply for who they are. From Trayvon Martin to Mohammed Abdul-Khader to Khalif Bowder to Ahed Tamimi, racism, state violence, and mass incarceration have robbed our people of their childhoods and their futures. In a bold move to protect Palestinian children like Ahed from widespread abuse by Israeli forces, Representative Betty McCollum of Minnesota introduced an unprecedented bill last November entitled Promoting Human Rights by Ending Military Israeli Detention of Palestinian Children Act. The bill has 22 co-sponsors and counting. We, the undersigned, call on all U.S. representatives to sign this bill and protect the lives and childhoods of Palestinian children. The Tamimi family stands up to Israeli brutality because they believe Palestinians, like all people, should be free. Dream Defenders stand with them and all Palestinians in their righteous struggle. Now and always, we commit to building a more just and loving world for us all. Free Ahed. And that was, again, an open letter from the Dream Defenders and signed by Black actors, activists, and musicians such as Danny Glover, Tom Morello, Angela Davis, Talib Kweli, and many others. So we'll leave you with a powerful one from Vic Mensa. But before we go, we have to thank all our Patreon supporters. Sarah, Scott, Matt, Dan, Zachary, Ryan, Misha, Israel, Benjamin, Ross, Camilo, DJ Kill McKinley, Jesse, Lee, Russell, Justine, Yannick, Andy, Frank, Anne, and Julien. See you next month. Stay rebel.
One thing I believe I could learn, to see my enemy as my brother, then we could be free, truly, and love could wash away all the sorrows. I'm not afraid to bleed, if it means we'll make a better today, not tomorrow. One day I dream of telling my mama, you ain't gotta work no more. Same for my father, born in Ghana, down on that dirt road floor. Far as he came, I can't complain, but pain is so subjective. Spend so much time counting issues, I forget to count my blessings. Watch my cousins back at home, getting water out of well, while I watch my brothers stacking stone, whipping water by the scale, trying to get a meal. On the other side, they ain't got a meal. We don't recognize we in heaven, so we think we live in hell. It's been getting kinda hard to tell, but sometimes I wake up and I look up in the sky, asking why I'm alive when the realest niggas die. But my pride won't let me give up, Lord, as hard as I try. In those times I try to remember that we could be free, if we only knew we were slaves to the pains of each other. One thing I believe, if I could learn, to see my enemy as my brother, then we could be free, truly, and love could wash away all the sorrows. I'm not afraid to bleed, if it means we'll make a bed today, not tomorrow. Make a bed today, not tomorrow.
I don't wanna wait for the afterlife. I don't wanna vigil by candlelight. I don't wanna be the new sacrifice. I don't wanna turn into a poltergeist, be a ghost at night full of broken dreams. Mama crying at an open casket, cold as ice in a suit three-piece, all dressed up for Sunday masses. Pastors say put faith in God, but faith alone can't make things right. Fuck is you to patronize somebody's son who daddy died? Why they flood Baton Rouge? Why the city singing Alton's blues? Why I feel like Jay a kiss every time I watch the news. What the fuck I got to lose? So I'm down to bleed if it means things improve. You fools saying all lives matter, but it's black lies you refuse to include. Blocked from the polls, locked in a hood, trying to stop you from voting and stop you from growing. The cops keep blowing and blowing, keep black people rocking the cotton they don't want you to own. But sometimes I wake up and I look up in the sky, asking why I survived all the days that I could've died. Who am I in my place to contemplate suicide? In those times I try to remember that we could be free, yeah. Truly, if we only knew we were slaves to the pains of each other. One thing I believe, I could learn, to see my enemies.
today than tomorrow, 'cause only love.
Tell somebody, love. Make my enemy my brother.
Love.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
Make a better today, not tomorrow.